It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast. It is Friday. We have the DFS game-by-game breakdown, and I'm Adam Pfeiffer. I'm not Derek Brown. D-Bro had a very unfortunate incident happen with his home. He had some plumbing issues, and I feel terrible for him because he wasn't able to make the podcast, and it would have been a very fun pod because we always have a guest on the Friday show. So myself and the guest, our head honcho, our fearless leader, Kevin Adams, Magic Sports Guy. Kev, dude, it's been a long time coming, man. What's up?
What's up, man? Yeah, you got me on the pod. I'm usually writing all day Friday, so I started a little bit earlier. I was hoping to get some D-Bro action because he's a freaking nutcase on this podcast, and I love it. But I was just talking to someone about you and your professional radio voice, sir. Like, very impressive. It's not a surprise to see this podcast jumping up the iTunes list. And I'm really stoked on being on here and going over this slate. Should be a fun slate with a lot of really hyped totals, not a lot of weather, so let's get going.
Yeah, and luckily we're recording this early Friday evening, at least on the East Coast. And that's the other thing, I just, you know, we're all in like different time zones, so that was pretty confusing at first as well. But yeah, before we get started, a couple things to talk about from FTN. So David Jones, who does the primetime stream and the Thursday night stuff, he took down, what, 30K?
35 grand.
35 grand.
And he's always a very consistent player. Like, he, you know, he had about $1,200 in play, runs out his 150 lineups. He's just an ultra contrarian. He is just perfect for the showdown slates. He absolutely destroyed showdown slates last year, so it's not surprising to see him take his first one down this season. He's been pretty consistent all the way through. And if you're not checking out our showdown coverage, we're doing a really good job with that, with David, with Elliot, who I hate to say, you know, give him credit, but he does a really good job on the showdown slates. And now we're actually breaking down every single showdown game and slate on the Sunday games, which there's some real edge there that a lot of people are realizing, that not a lot of people even realize there's the one game showdown slates for each individual game on Sundays. But when we can identify a really nice value play like last night with James, there's a lot of money to be made over on those kind of weird showdown slates that no one's paying attention to.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but I'm immediately in a better mood after watching Davante Adams play football, so I'm feeling good after last night.
Always. We actually hit his preseason over touchdown prop at FTN Bets, over 7.5 TDs, so
only
nice
took him
to
six
get.
Games.
Oh, yeah, took six games, so not a bad cash there. If I may tout myself, which I love to do on Twitter, so might as well do it on the pod.
Go for it.
I'm sitting at 40 units right now at FTN Bets. A lot of people are jumping in the prop game. I've been doing this for 3 years. I was over 130 units in baseball, 40 units last year in the NFL. This is kind of what I do, if I may say so. So if you're not tailing myself, Noah, Elliot, Javi, Jeff Radcliffe, Chris Meany, I mean, the crew over at FTN Bets is legitimately the most fire I've ever seen in my sports betting career. I've never seen this many people over 30 plus units in 8 games. It's pretty ridiculous. If you want to see how we're betting, you can actually go over there free, check it out. You don't have to sign up to see all the bets that we have either won or lost. So check that out at FTN Bets.
Absolutely. Let's get right into it. The first game, Seattle at Buffalo. This game, I'm very excited for obvious reasons, but even if I wasn't a Bills fan, this game is really exciting. 55-point implied total at the moment with Seattle, around 3-point road favorites. Chris Carson was out last week, and he has not practiced all week this week, and he was actually ruled out about 15 minutes ago. So we got that news from Seattle, which is very important, especially because Carlos Hyde has already been ruled out. So we'll probably see another backfield mainly consisting of DJ Dallas and Travis Homer for Seattle. And for Buffalo, not any really massively significant injuries, although Matt Milano is once again out. Just the guy can't stay healthy. And Mitch Morris, their center, is out with a concussion. So
is Dawson Knox back?
Dawson Knox was removed from the COVID list, and he's good to go.
Okay, that's so interesting.
Yeah,
I've been using Croft a little bit.
So have I. This game's interesting, man. Like, if I was going into this game, you know, when I took notes, not knowing the Seattle running back situation, for me, it was literally just play anybody that catches passes, because maybe not anybody, but the first player that stood out to me when looking at the slate and this game was Tyler Lockett. If you look at the games he's had where he's popped off, they've really all been in spots where those teams have struggled against the slot. I mean, Dallas struggles against the slot and everywhere, so that helps. But, like, you look at Arizona and his huge week. It sets up really similarly to that. Now, is Tyler Lockett going to have 200 yards and 3 touchdowns? Probably not. But you look at what happened in that game. Patrick Peterson followed DK Metcalf around, and Russell Wilson said, all right, you're going to take him away, and Tyler Lockett's just going to go off against the rest of your corners and linebackers, and that was the case. That's probably what's going to happen here in Buffalo. I think Tre'Davious White probably goes and follows DK Metcalf, and then Tyler Lockett against a team that's, you know, bottom 8 in slot receptions allowed and bottom 7 in slot targets allowed. I just think it sets up that this is the first thing I tweeted on Tuesday. I was like, I don't know how Buffalo defends Tyler Lockett in this game.
Yeah, Trey White really hasn't been following people around this year. I mean, if you go to our shadow index, you won't see his name on there. He's been pretty much sticking to that one side, which is the primary side. I believe it's like 80% of DK's routes are on the outside, and about 50% will end up in front of Trey White unless they move him around. But if you go and look at like route charts like I like to do, when they want to get aggressive with DK, they move him all around. So like if you go to Next Gen and you start looking at the games where he really popped, they're going to move him around. And unless they decide to travel White with him, I think DK could actually surprise here and is not someone to just fade in tournaments. That said, Lockett is the obvious smash play of the week, and we are not alone, my friend. If you go to our ownership projections, he's actually higher than James Conner on FanDuel in projected ownership, which is kind of fucking mind-blowing, if I may say so. Like, why is a wide receiver higher than James Conner against the Dallas Cowboys? But, you know, why I say that is because receivers generally have higher volatility, right, than a running back. And we can generally fade high ownership wide receivers easier than we can running backs in smash spots. So it is really interesting to see that Lockett is the no doubt everyone wants to play. And it makes a lot of sense, right? Cooper Kupp versus the Bills, like Jamison Crowder against the Bills. Like, this has been a thing for quite a while. So it makes a whole lot of sense. And yeah, he is a cash game lock this week is Tyler Lockett.
Yeah, and obviously they wouldn't have just primarily put him on Tyler Lockett, but Matt Milano being out, like the middle of the defense is the reason why the Bills give up so much production to slot receivers, and they just don't have anybody. Like, Matt Milano was a former safety in college. Like, he is probably one of the 5 best coverage linebackers in the NFL, but they just haven't had him for many games this year. And you've seen, like you said, Cooper Kupp in the slot, Jamison Crowder in the slot. And we saw a couple huge tight end games when they were missing Milano and Edmonds. So I just think there's a really easy story to tell with this game where you just kind of pair Russell Wilson with Lockett. And you probably at this point, maybe even before this point probably, you want to just get some exposure to one of these pass catchers, or maybe both, every week anyway with the way Russell Wilson's throwing the football. But I love the other side too. I love Josh Allen with Stephon Diggs here. Seattle, they allow the most air yards in the NFL on completions. I know they're getting Jamal Adams back and Carlos Dunlap's there now, but I don't. With the way their corner's set up and Shaquille Griffin's now out again, like, I don't see a situation where, A, they slow down these receivers, and B, like, yeah, Buffalo clearly finally for the first time established the run last week, and Josh Allen threw the ball 18 times. Seattle's been better against the run, and their offense forces you to throw. I mean, their offenses against Seattle are averaging, like, 75 plays per game, and I looked at some of their, like, drive metrics. Seattle, as you probably guess, are among the league leaders in points per drive, but they're like 8th or 9th in yards per drive, which tells me they just get a bunch of big plays, and that's great for pace, and that's great for high totals. So I love Josh Allen and Diggs, and even John Brown, who's 4,600. He's been full in practice. Like, I'm not worried about – if you're looking at the game logs from Buffalo last week, just don't. They threw the ball 18 times. It's just not happening in this game.
Yeah, it was a nasty game. That said, Seattle is blitzing more. We saw them blitz the crap out of Garoppolo last week. Mm-hmm. And they play a lot of zone. That's not exactly the best combination for Josh Allen, right?
Yeah, he's much better. Him and Diggs crush man coverage, but
– Correct. So
we've seen a lot of teams just play off and just don't give up the deep ball and let Josh Allen.
That's what they're going to do. They're going to force him to be accurate. They're going to force him to make plays. I got to be honest. I know this is a little bit contrarian, but I mean, if I just came on here and told you everything that everyone likes, I'm not that high on Josh Allen. I've heard some people really have him up at the very, very top. Like, I like Russ Wilson better.
Yeah.
I like a couple other plays better. I don't really know that his accuracy is just going to solve itself this week, right? I mean, he's been pretty damn inaccurate over the last 3 or 4 games. You watch a lot of Bills football, I'm sure you can attest to that. And the reason we want to keep playing the Seattle, like you said, is the shift in both pass rate and neutral situations, the shift in pace. Like, I've gone on diatribes for years about how we're basically taking Mike Trout and putting him in like 9th in the lineup and having him bunt. That was the equivalent of what we were doing with Russ Wilson for years in Seattle. It was like almost like a waste of one of the best players in our history. It actually pissed me off, right? So it is really, really awesome to see them throw first, pick up the pace, and even when they're ahead, they're not going complete run heavy. And with Carson out and just DJ Dallas, this is going to be another smash spot for Russ Wilson. I do like Dallas quite a bit again on FanDuel, where his price is still, you know, at the very bottom. I think it's 5.3K. And we know that Buffalo is, what, 24th in rush, 22nd in pass DVOA. Their defense is really not good, that good, especially, like you said, between the hash. They're pretty much just going to stay away from Trey White. And I really like Seattle in this game. We know how well they travel back east, yada, 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 on all those splits. So give me the Seattle Seahawks this week, too, if you're betting.
So, first of all, I am a homer, but I have to ask, because I have these weird feelings of Buffalo, right? Like, the Tennessee game a few weeks back, I went into that game all week telling everybody Buffalo's going to get crushed in this game, and that's what happened. We had Elliot on the Jets-Bills week, and I was like, dude, Elliot, I don't know. I know you hate the Jets. The Bills are not winning this game by a large margin. I know the Bills. They don't blow anybody out. Got that right. I think the Bills win this game. I don't know why, so I'll leave it at that. But I think,
it's because you're a homer. That's why.
That's why I had that. But I'm a homer, but I'm a realist too. Like I did not expect them to compete against Tennessee. I don't know. I think this game is going to be awesome. I really do.
I did too. But Jamal Adams is legit. Do you believe Seattle actually is top 3 in takeaways this year? But on a defense, which is just shows that these high total games with lots of plays and lots of pass attempts, lots of dropbacks, can lead to turnovers. You know, people look at low totals. It's actually the high totals with lots of opportunity that can lead to some pick sixes and things like that. And we know Josh Allen can put one on the ground and can do some really stupid shit when he loses his mind on crazy plays. So I just think Seattle will be able to outlast him. And Russell Wilson is just that dude. I mean, he's the MVP. So give me Seattle, but this will be an interesting one for us to talk shit about it to each other after the game.
Yeah, we'll get out of this game, but real quick, you mentioned how Seattle's, you know, hashtag let Russ cook, and their pass rate on early downs is like the highest in the league. Buffalo's right up there too, which has been fun. You mentioned how that game was kind of sloppy against New England, and that was their game plan all week. It was to run the ball against a bad run defense in crappy weather. That's probably not going to be their game plan this week, and they probably won't be able to. So it's going to be fun to see these two quarterbacks, you know, drop back 40 times.
New England played almost all dime and nickel and pretty much just dropped 6-7 guys back and said, go for it, dude. Like, we'll take our chances against the running backs. And it worked really well. I think Buffalo ran it, 31 times or something?
Yeah, but again, Moss and Singletary combined had 28 carries. So,
yeah, to look at that and think that's going to happen with Seattle, who gets people into high pass rates, like you said, is just unrealistic. Like, you see this total sitting at, 55 points? This is an obvious stack them and play them if you got them game.
Yeah, I'm so excited to watch this game. Let's move on to what we believe should be this year's MVP, to last year's MVP in Patrick Mahomes, or Super Bowl MVP, I should say, in Patrick Mahomes. Chiefs and Panthers, this game is in Kansas City. It has a 52.5 point implied total. Chiefs are favored by 10.5. When I was taking notes for this game, we were unsure about the status of one Christian McCaffrey, but he's been activated. He will play. What do we do with Christian McCaffrey, if anything?
Did you see Aaron Jones be questionable? Yeah. Like, if he's on the field, you're playing CMC.
Especially at this price. Like, you're not going to see him at this price again.
And this matchup in which you're going to get script to get a ton of pass attempts. KC already, you know, stinks against the run. I believe they're going to be without their big boy Jones in the middle. So they're going to be a little more vulnerable in the inside. You're going to have basically CMC do his thing. I don't really see Mike Davis mixing in more than what, like 5 to 10 plays, where maybe last year it was 0 to 3 plays, mm-hmm. but maybe it's 5 to 10. I don't think that's a reason to fade CMC here. That said, I don't know that we also need to roll them out in cash games with Dalvin Cook right. and the Edmonds and shit. Who's the other one? Connor. In such smash spots, I don't think we really need to go to cash. But to go in with your GPP lineups with no CMC is just death. Like, I'll definitely run him back on a Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Kelsey team, which is brutal against your cap. But you just got to do that in GPPs. There's plenty, plenty of value to fill those rosters out. I've made about 10 of them already on FanDuel. And this is a game you just want to stack. Mahomes destroys zone coverage, unlike Josh Allen. He just picks apart zone defenses. Carolina can't rush the passer, dude. Like, he's just going to stand there and pick apart this defense horribly. It's only a complete blowout that's going to keep him from another QB1 30-plus point fantasy game.
So I'm glad you said Mahomes-Kelsey stacks, because I have zero interest in Tyreek Hill for the reasons you mentioned. The Panthers are literally doing this year on defense what the Colts did last year and played such a soft zone and just said, okay, you're not going to get 40-yard touchdown passes on us. And that's what we've been seeing this year, right? They're allowing just 9.3 yards per completion. That's the fourth lowest mark in the NFL. They have given – like, Tyreek Hill has been at 98 and 99 yards in two of his games this year. So he's been close to 100 yards, but he hasn't gotten 100 yards this year yet. And his touchdowns have been great. He has like 8 touchdowns. Carolina's given up a handful of 100-yard games this year, but they've been to receivers that are getting pretty massive target shares, right? It's Calvin Ridley. It's Mike Evans without Chris Godwin. Tyreek Hill's had exactly six targets in 5 of his 8 games. Like, he is literally like locked in at 6 targets each week, despite how pass-heavy this team can be at times. So for me, like, I don't have any interest in Tyreek Hill. I think it's going to be a lot of Kelsey. And I have some interest in Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I don't know if that's crazy, but he's pretty cheap, at least on DraftKings. He's 6,100. I don't know what to make of this backfield with Le'Veon Bell there, because you look at his debut against Denver. Massive blowout, crappy conditions. Their offense played like, they had like 49 to 50 snaps on offense, and their starters were out like with 3 or 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And then last week, for whatever reason, despite being up by 25 most of the game against the Jets, they only ran, they ran the ball, what, 12 times between the two of them? So, like, if we get a closer game, it'll be interesting to see what the workload is. But even still, with that soft zone, Carolina this season, they're allowing 8.5 targets per game to running backs, the fourth most in the NFL. I kind of like CEH. Nobody's going to really be on him. The only problem is, like, does he have any sort of touchdown equity right now? That's the real concern.
Yeah, he's a deep – I mean, he would be like a Millie Maker type play is how I wrote him up. But mm-hmm. going back to Hill, hate to disagree with you here, but I actually tweeted out that Tyreek Hill is going to catch a long touchdown pass on the right side of the field. And so calling my shot specifically, and here's why. Like, Carolina actually has been somewhat vulnerable on deep passes to the right side of the field, allowing – 117 passer rating and a 53% completion rate, which is 27th, compared to a 52 passer rating on the left side of the field. Okay, so Tyreek sees 47% of his deep targets in the deep right quadrant of the field. I know this is getting really specific.
Well, no, but that's exactly where he made his mark against the Jets last
correct.
Week.
Correct. Yep. So he gets 27% more of his targets in the most vulnerable section of the KC pass defense per, like, the heat maps. So I actually think he could get that first 100-yard game. He's definitely scoring a touchdown. He's expensive. He's not like this guaranteed must shove in, right? Like, mm-hmm. you can go Mahomes almost naked and be pretty happy with his 30-plus points, especially because you got Mecole Hardman who's emerged. DeMarcus Robinson is actually a guy we played last week in our core Sunday update as a Denzel Mims pivot, and he worked out really, really well. But my question for you, my friend, is have you heard Sammy Watkins news today?
Today, I haven't. I just know he's been limited throughout the week. So,
because he's a big difference in this
game,
right?
He's massive.
Yeah, for those secondary wide receivers, like, we want Hardman and Robinson. We'd almost prefer them to sit Watkins one more week so we can have some of that value. If not, I'm just going to go Kelsey. I'm going to go Tyreek. No one's going to play Kelsey because he's up to like $8,000 on FanDuel this week, and he's just tough to fit in. So I'm really liking him in that Mahomes stack. Go get your 50 points and start your stack that way.
Yeah, Watkins has been limited in practice. He's officially deemed questionable this afternoon. So
love it. Yeah, it could be another DeMarcus Robinson week at 3.2 as sure. a nice way to get your stack in with and still have a little bit of cap room around those other spots. Rasul Douglas was also like out. I think he's coming back, the cornerback for Carolina. He was on the COVID list. I'm always a little bit worrisome when people are coming back off of the COVID list, right? Especially when you're about to match up with Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman. And then also Corn Elder was limited. So they're like really beat up in the secondary.
Yeah, Elder's full Thursday and Friday. He doesn't have an injury designation, so he appears to be good to go. But Corn Elder is like a 4.5, 6.40. So not that anybody runs with Tyreek Hill, but you'd like to have... Like, you would think Dante Jackson, with his speed, he's probably one of the fastest corners in the NFL. It doesn't mean he can defend Tyreek Hill, but you'd think they would cover him. We'll see, though.
But more issues there. Jeremy Chinn has kind of been a standout, right? And he's also...
He's questionable.
I think questionable on the side of doubtful. There's an interesting line from Brian Burns, who's their standout defensive end. He said,
so good.
I told Jeremy Chinn, it's probably, this is a quote, more serious than he thinks. And he should rest up.
Wow.
So I'm thinking we don't see Jeremy Chinn. And if we're going with Mahomes and all these guys against a depleted secondary, like, do not forget about your KC stats. I know they're expensive, but just do it anyway.
Absolutely. Let's move on to a really interesting game. Denver Broncos at the Atlanta Falcons. 50.5 point total. Falcons at home favored by 4. Injury news. We got to wait on Calvin Ridley. He is... not practiced once all week, which puts him on the extremely doubtful side, in my opinion. But, you know, the Falcons have kind of downplayed the injury as compared to what it looked like on Thursday night last week. But anybody that doesn't practice Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, it's a real uphill battle for them to play.
Is that right? Did he miss Friday? Because I saw a tweet from Kelsey Conway, wide receiver Calvin Ridley is in a quote-unquote great spot per Falcons head coach Raheem Morris. He was hoping to see practice today, but won't since the team isn't in the facility. So that might be – I think he's going to play is my point.
Okay.
From that tweet. Now, maybe we're wrong, but I think we should kind of like not go too big here on the analysis because he obviously makes such a big difference because he pulls in guys like Russell Gage, guys like Zacharias, right? So you got to – basically wait. We know we love Julio here because Denver's cornerbacks.
Yeah, AJ Boye didn't practice again with a concussion, correct. So he's probably not playing.
He's out. I'm calling him out. And are you ready for this? Like, they got rid of this homeboy, Devontae Bosby. They cut him. They had to bring up a practice guy named Kevin Tolliver. Never even heard of him, cornerback. So that means they have to put Asan Bassi, 5'10", Asan Bassi against Julio Jones.
Yeah.
On the outside with Mike Omadia, but he's another shitty cornerback on Denver Broncos, in which we just want to play both of these outside guys if they're in. But Julio's kind of a cash game lock if Ridley is ruled out, right?
Yeah, I mean, he played three games with Ridley out last year down the stretch and had 48 targets. So,
yeah, that's pretty good. Not to mention he's been absolutely smashing it. What, his last three games? It's been a rough month for the no Julio crowd. I struggle
with him and Adams each week of who the best receiver in the NFL is. I really do.
I mean, it's Adams right now, and it's always kind of Adams because he's got that touchdown fucking nose, right?
Like his release is just stupid.
Well, he just scores so many touchdowns. Like, if you go back, he's now on a pace of like being one of the highest touchdown rate receivers in the history of football, like top five ever. Whereas, of course, Julio is a top five receiver and a top five talent, but the dude can't score touchdowns. And this is not like some new thing. It's been freaking, 8-9 years of this. So
I like, Ridley's obviously the main piece of news we have to wait on. If he sits, I like Hayden Hurst at 4,100. I think that's a really fair price for him. He's been over 50 yards in three straight. I think he's been more involved each week. He's among the league leaders in routes run at tight end, which is really all I care about when I'm playing tight ends, not named, Travis Kelce? If you're running routes, you got a shot. That's why I don't play, Jonnu Smith or Tyler Higbee. Like, they're not running routes. Hayden Hurst isn't blocking. He's running routes. So anybody else in Atlanta, though, like, I don't really want to play Gurley. They sat him for a whole quarter last Thursday night. I know he still, quote-unquote, got there with the touchdown ability, but just don't want to play Gurley.
Yeah, hashtag never Gurley for me. Like, I'll just take my lumps when he gets his...
That's perfect, because that's exactly what Debro would have said. He never plays Gurley, so there you go.
Oh, I hate Gurley so much. I do love this Denver side. We can definitely dig in over here.
I want to play all the Noah Fant, so...
So, Dan Quinn was removed, and man, was this guy terrible. This should have happened, after the New England collapse, probably. But when you're looking at some of the Atlanta splits now, we have a decent sample, and it's pretty dramatic, like on both sides of the ball. They've allowed 21 points in three games with Quinn gone compared to 32.2 under Quinn. They have gone 2-1 against the spread with Quinn gone versus 1-4. I mean, it goes on and on. They've 29 points a game scored without him, 24 with. So it's a really exciting thing here. And you also can look at another split is Atlanta in the dome. They've been just terrible outside and have gone, I believe it's 4-0 or 3-1 to the over inside, which includes the Minnesota game plus their three games in Atlanta. So I'm liking the Denver offense, even with Atlanta improving a little bit. And I know you said you like my guy Noah Fant. So let's start there, man. Why do you like Fant so much?
So he is still just an absolute incredibly explosive athletic player. Obviously, you look at the matchup, and we know Atlanta's been bad against tight ends. I just think there's a lot of potential for him. The price is not at a point where I'm against it. The Falcons allowing a league high 6.3 catches per game to tight ends, and one touchdown per game to position is also the most in the NFL. Noah Fant has a 20.3% target share on the year, which is sixth best among tight ends, and he's second among tight ends in deep targets. So, yeah, like, his target floor seems to be like 6 or 7 each week. I know Albert O has taken a couple red zone looks away, but it's not like he's playing a huge allotment of snaps. So, yeah, for me, like, I love pairing Locke, who's really cheap, and pairing him with Fant and running it back with Julio. Like, I think there's a lot of potential with that. I don't see any way Julio gets covered by any of these corners we mentioned. And if, Ridley's out, he's going to get like 15 targets. Then the question is, because I don't want, like, if there was just one running back on Denver, I'd have interest. But Melvin Gordon ran 24 pass routes last week. Lindsey ran 17. Lindsey hasn't been used as the pass catcher, which is annoying because that's the avenue you attack with running backs against Atlanta. Like, up the middle on a per carry basis, they've still been good. They've been good since last year. So for me, like, Lindsey is the better, running back at this point, but they're playing Melvin Gordon more in passing down. So that's kind of a wash for me. The question is, do you go to any Jerry Jeudy? If Tim Patrick plays, he's questionable, I believe. There's an avenue there. Like, these receiving options for Denver are all pretty cheap. So we'll see.
Yeah, I got some really good stuff on the Denver side. So for one, Drew Lock has only played one game inside in his career. And we remember that game from his big 27-point breakout in Houston.
Oh yeah, I remember that game. That was the Houston game, yeah.
Yeah, this game feels a lot like that, where it's just that prime matchup indoors, where they're going to face a team that can score a lot of points.
By the way, Noah Fant went off that game.
Noah Fant went off that game. Atlanta allows the most yards after the catch, which we know Noah Fant excels in, and they allow the most fantasy points per game to the tight end position. I don't like fantasy points per game very much, but we know for years and years that the tight end is one of the most kind of bankable stats, right? With fantasy points against. It's like you have a scheme, certain schemes, you know, kind of go around taking away the tight end, certain do not. This is one of the do nots. They just do not cover the tight end very well. But going back to Fant, Atlanta has allowed 300-yard passing games in every single game this year, except last week in that really ugly rain game Thursday night, where Teddy B only dropped back 23 times.
Yeah, he missed like a series and a half with the hit.
He missed some times. Correct. So on top of that, are you ready for this? I do believe Tim Patrick is back, and this dude has been a legit outside threat without Courtland Sutton in the lineup. He's got that solid 6'4", 210-pound profile. He played extremely well against Stephon Gilmore in like a shadow coverage situation, like 4 for 101 on 8 targets. It's never going to be real efficient when Drew Lock is your quarterback, so I wouldn't really worry about like the low catch rate. But this guy is going to be sub 5%. You're going to have a great script. These outside Atlanta corners can't cover anything. And what that also is going to do is drop Jerry Jeudy back into the slot. Oh, yeah. Some really interesting stats there. Like, so over the last two games, KJ Hamler's played 68.4% in the slot and Jerry Jeudy 10%, which is complete opposite to the rest of the season, in which when Patrick is on the field, Jerry Jeudy has played 80% in the slot. So you're going to get Hamler back at the Z. You're going to get Patrick back as the wide receiver one and Jeudy back where he belongs inside, which all of a sudden with Fant and, like you said, the tight end too, who's – I don't want to butcher his name as well, Albert O. So you're cooking with fire all of a sudden, right, with some Melvin Gordon targets. Like all of a sudden when they're all healthy – and they're lined up the way they are in a dome, in a good script. Man, I have one of my three max team is a Denver stack.
Yeah, I love Jeudy with him going to the slot because who is probably the most targeted corner in fantasy for us to play receivers against the first 4 weeks of the year? It's probably Isaiah Oliver. And then they moved him to the slot. They demoted him to the slot the last 3 weeks. So that means if Judy's back in the slot, he is going to see Isaiah Oliver, who's been awful. So I love the Jeudy, Lock, and Fant stack, and it's so inexpensive. Like I mentioned, like Fant's the quote-unquote kind of expensive one at 4,600 on DraftKings, but Judy's 4,700, and then Drew Lock's obviously not expensive anywhere. So love that, and it's even better if Ridley's out because you know exactly who to run it back with. So, yeah, I love the Jeudy call, and I obviously like Noah Fant a lot too.
And don't forget about Tim Patrick. I actually like him quite a bit. If you're just going to stack this game up, I don't mind going 3-2s, which means quarterback plus three connections, believe it or not. Because, again, if you're going to get 300 to 400 yards, which you kind of need from Lock to win a GPP, like those guys got to come for the ride, right?
Yeah.
And they just have to. And so if the running backs get all the touchdowns, you're not going to win the GPP anyway. So bring them with you.
Cool. Let's keep going. Colts and Ravens. This game is, I believe, in Indianapolis. Yeah, it is. Indianapolis. 48-point total. This game's a pick 'em.
It actually did move to Baltimore -1.5.
Right.
I don't understand this line. I don't play the sharp money. I don't play the trap line. I don't play the, oh, there must be something weird going on. Who fucking cares about all that? I just play numbers, right? I play what my analytics say, and I play good numbers. And when I looked at this game and wrote it up, oh my God, it just – Baltimore really stood out as someone who should control this game with all the injuries to Indy. I just don't really believe in this Indy team. They have a solid defense.
They haven't played anybody, man.
But they haven't played anybody. And I just like – I think Baltimore comes in here and wins this by a touchdown. And so, therefore, I have – you know, I'm going to give this free pick away. I do have Baltimore minus 1.5 posted at FTM bets.
Dude, I agree with you. I think Baltimore, that line, yeah, I know there's the whole COVID situation and Marlon Humphrey's not going to play, who's one of the best corners in the league, but he still is.
But this is Indy with no wide receivers.
Right. T.Y. Hilton's doubtful. Marcus Johnson, who I kind of like as a play. I like play. It. Absolutely. Yep. But he's on the injury report. He's questionable. I believe he was full on Friday, which gives him a good opportunity to play. Like, this game is easy for me, right? Like, I'm probably, if I'm playing a Colt, I'm punting with Marcus Johnson, and that's it. I don't know about you. I don't know how you trust anybody in this backfield, especially in a terrible matchup.
Yeah, I've made about 30-plus lineups so far, and a Colt has yet to sniff a lineup. Like, what are we going to do, man? Play Zach Pascal? Like, sure, he's going to run in the slot. If Humphrey's out, that actually could be a decent matchup, right?
Yeah.
But that would be, like, my only play if he is indeed out, because it's kind of like a last man standing kind of situation. But they go, like, I think it's 60% 12. So they're going to run out their three tight ends, probably even more. And that's such a troll situation. Like, I know Burton's been getting it done through a couple touchdowns.
Why can't you just combine all three of them?
Oh, my God, man. It's just such an terrible situation. I'm a huge Mo Alie-Cox guy just with his size profile, but they're not going to use him, so there's really nothing to see here. So we can pretty much check off Andy. I mean, Michael Pittman is back, but again, like, do you want to run him out against the outside Ravens cornerbacks?
Absolutely not. I really think the Ravens are interesting here. Like, Lamar Jackson is the cheapest I've seen him in forever.
Yep, he's 6,900 now.
And it makes sense because the passing game has been very underwhelming for the Ravens this year. But at that price, like, Lamar Jackson is still on pace for over 900 rushing yards. And I think, like, the Colts have been, first of all, we talked about it. I think their defense is above average. I don't think they're a top five or six defense in the league. They haven't played anybody. We've talked about that. Their run defense is solid, but the Ravens' running scheme is pretty much matchup-proof with how they operate.
Was it the Pitt run defense?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they just crushed them.
J.K. Dobbins was the first running back to reach 100 yards against them this year, and Gus Edwards missed the entire second quarter and still had 16 for 87 and a touchdown. And he missed the entire second quarter.
When you hear, like, sharp analytics people say defenses don't matter, this is more what they mean. It's not that you don't go after good and bad matchups. It's that when you have an offensive scheme like the Ravens or the 49ers, and that this is just what they do. When they're blocking and executing, they're going to run the ball on you because they run at a 52% rate, the highest in the league. This is the worst pace game as far as, you know, combined.
This game's gonna be so
slow. Yeah, it's not real good. The weird thing is that Phil Rivers, if you look at, like, a point per dollar this season, it's not even close how much better he's been than Lamar, just because Lamar has been priced at 2019 levels and not even sniffing close to that kind of production, right? Mm-hmm. So old man Rivers has been, on average, I did the math, $2,700 cheaper per week on DraftKings this season, but has one less top 10 finish this season, which is pretty sad for Lamar. But it also just shows, like, why guys like you and me never pay up in fantasy football for quarterbacks. Right? Because it's just, why am I going to do that when I can go get an elite wide receiver and then find a really good quarterback later? We don't need to get into seasonal, but I mean, I think this was, like, the classic example to show people, like, those type of numbers are not really repeatable, as awesome as Lamar is, right?
Yeah. I think Baltimore is averaging, like, the last time I checked, they're averaging, like, 9 fewer plays per game offensively. Like, they're still, like, 9th or 8th in points per game, but they're obviously, like, top 3 last year. I have interest in Lamar in tournaments at that price, just because, like, Hollywood Brown has been creating so much separation every week. It's, like, I looked at his next-gen stats for separation, and you know how you usually see tight ends and slot receivers in the high end for that. And Hollywood Brown was up in that high-end range. Like, he is just open every game, and Lamar Jackson's missing him. Like, Hollywood's second in deep targets, but his catchable deep targets are among the lowest in the NFL. Like, one of these games, that connection is going to pop off, and I kind of want to be on the side of that when it happens. And then you have the Mark Andrews situation where, like, his production, if he hasn't been scoring, has been a lot worse than I thought this year, despite him running way more routes. What do you think of the backfield, though? Mark Ingram's doubtful. Again, we saw the snaps are a little bit skewed because, like I said, Dobbins played on Sunday against Pittsburgh. His snaps were well ahead of Gus Edwards, but Edwards missed pretty much the entire second quarter with that knee injury. He obviously came back in the game. He got the start and got the goal line carry, but like you said, this team's running the ball like 52% of the time. That's more than enough for both these guys to get 15 carries. So do you have any interest?
I do. Like, Dobbins might be in my cash game.
Yeah, I like Dobbins a lot, too.
On Sunday morning at 5-3 on FanDuel. It's just hard to get a guy, like you said, who's pretty much locked into 15 touches at 5.3K on a team that has a lot of red zone opportunities, moves the ball quite a bit still, right? They're still a plus offense. They're just not what they were last year. Yeah, he's one of my top plays of the week. Third in yards created, fourth in yards per touch, first in actual and adjusted yard carries. So the guy has been basically the nuts when they give him the ball. Edwards is fine in like a deep GPP scenario because I do believe he's going to get 15 carries, probably has a little higher equity share. And we've seen these guys give up like, here's a few games, 1463 and a touchdown to Dalvin Cook, 2072 plus another 20 yards and a touchdown to Kareem Hunt. Joe Mixon got about, 60, 70 yards and a touchdown at 5.3.
Geo scored in that game, too.
Geo scored on that game. So they're not, like you said, they're not the 80-freaking-5 Bears. So I think we can roll out Dobbins with a lot of comfort in all formats. He's definitely one of my favorite plays on the slate. The Ravens did lose Ronnie Stanley, which is significant, but that was after 22 snaps, and you saw them just destroy Pittsburgh for the entire game. So I don't think we need to worry about that. One more thing on Lamar, going back to him, why I do not like him at all in this spot, is this is a really fascinating stat to me. Indy has the fourth lowest blitz rate in the league, but the ninth highest pressure rate. It's the only team with that combination of bottom 10 blitz and top 10 pressure. So that's bad for Lamar. You know what that means? They're going to drop guys back in a zone, and it's kind of like the Josh Allen thing. They're going to make him be accurate.
Four-man rush.
But while getting pressure, right? And sure, that could lead to some scrambles if you like the rush attempts. I get that. But as far as like from the passing perspective, I'm not going to go after Indy, which is the toughest team against quarterbacks this year, fantasy points per game. Where I want to do is get some Dobbins, and then I do like Hollywood Brown quite a bit on the outside. He's taken the squeaky wheel narrative into this game. He actually tweeted some pretty bad shit I didn't see, and then they had to delete it.
Lamar apologized to him during the week. He's like, I'm sorry, I got to get you the ball more. So if you want a narrative,
this is happening. You know, he's never played on the car. I don't believe he's ever. Yeah, he did. He did in Houston this year, right? But, like, we love those kind of players inside on carpet. Like, this is just the spot for him. Rock Ya-Sin is slow as hell. He's so slow. He has zero chance to hang with Hollywood, who's third in deep targets per game. At 5.9 on FanDuel, I'm trying to talk more about FanDuel because I know some people accuse us of being too heavy DK. I freaking love Hollywood. He's one of my favorite sub 6,000 wide receivers. I'd rather just get exposure through him than have to deal with like paying up for Lamar and then, you know, put Hollywood on like a Mahomes or a Russell Wilson team. I'd rather do that.
Yeah, I think Hollywood's really interesting in tournaments because I've talked about him a lot in my stock report article I do every Monday on FTN Fantasy, but prior to last game, like, he's seen six targets in every game. And I know, okay, yep. Six targets isn't a lot. But when six targets is not a lot if you're in the, the most pass-heavy offense in the NFL. But when you're in Baltimore, who's the run-heaviest offense, six targets is still, like, 24% of the team targets. And he's been over 20% target share in every game prior to last week. So, like I said, if Lamar Jackson starts to get more accurate on these deep passes, like, Hollywood Brown is going to pop off for, like, 5 for 120 and potentially one or two touchdowns.
Yeah, I have, like, I like him. I like him quite a bit. I'm putting him in a lot as, like, that last, like, third wide receiver in a game stack, right, where you're looking for, like, some real pop from that one-off. He's my guy on FanDuel to do that. Mark Andrews is interesting because FanDuel did not touch his price. He's still above Waller, which is crazy. But DK actually got him down to 4.8 below TJ Hockenson finally. So now he's in that, you said, he's more in that Hayden Hurst tier, right? He's just a little bit above Noah Fant, where his red zone target share is 35%. So if you are going to stack Lamar, he is the most logical guy with his touchdown upside.
Cool. Let's move on. A lot of high total games on this slate. Next up, Jacksonville and Houston, 50.5-point total. Texans favored by 7, and we have a new quarterback in Jacksonville, Jake Luton, starting in place of the quote-unquote injured Gardner Minshew. Are we getting any Jake Luton at 4,900 on DraftKings?
I would have been interested if they made him 4 grand, like back in the day. But 4,900, like, can I just go to Denver and for 5,400? I don't know. You tell me about this kid, because I don't do a lot of college football. I look at profiles. I look at like what they did in college, and this guy looks terrible on the paper.
Yeah, so
standpoint.
I'm not a like huge terrible. College like scout or anything, but from what I've been reading and looking at on Jacksonville's site and everything, they believe he has just a massively strong arm, and they are going to throw the ball down the field with him. And that is exciting, because Minshew was tilting the hell out of me. He was seemingly throwing catchable passes to everybody not named DJ Chark. So Minshew, before getting benched, was like 24th in catchable pass rate and 24th in adjusted completion percentage on deep passes. Chark has had just 4 catchable deep targets all year. Like, he's been getting open downfield, but he's been either getting balls thrown out of bounds or like hospital balls. So I think, given like Minshew for fantasy has always been fine because he's running a good amount, and he, you know, from fantasy he's been good per usual, but from a real life perspective he's been bad. So for me, like, the move to Jake Luton, like, is that really gonna make me less excited about Chark? Not really. Is he like a core play for me? Not exactly. He'll probably see, you know, shadow coverage from Bradley Roby, who I'm not worried about shadow coverage from Bradley Roby, to be fair, but I don't hate the stack of that too, because I think nobody wants to play DJ Chark, and I think with how frustrated he's been, he's been complaining about the quarterback play for weeks now. Before their bye in week, what was it, 7? I watched him just on the sideline. He was just over it. So maybe they tell this kid, you know, throw the ball to DJ Chark, but really, the new identity of this team has been to give the ball to James Robinson 20 plus times. What do you think about Robinson?
Yeah, I love Robinson.
He's like, awesome.
We've been attacking Houston's rusty all year, and that's why I want to make fun of Elliott really quick, because like the fish thing, like, dude, it was against the team with the worst adjusted line yards in the league, the 31st open field rank, no, excuse me, 32nd dead last open field rank against Derrick Henry, who's been known once or two to break off a big open field run, hasn't he? So I've heard. So anyway, I do really like that play here. I do think he's got if the game stays close and within some reasonable script for him, he's going to get 20 touches. You know, he's the only player to get all of his team's goal line carries other than guess who?
Yep, Derrick Henry.
Derrick Henry. So
he leads the NFL in opportunity share. It's almost at 84%. Yes. He just gets every carry from this team. The only concern I have, and it's literally the only, they are 7-point underdogs, and Chris Thompson's back off the COVID list, and we started to see Thompson play more when they were trailing.
Yes.
But still, like, with how he looked against the Chargers before the bye, and given how good this matchup is, I mean, 39.7% of the Texans' yardage allowed this year has come via the run. I mean, it's just bad. Like, this game could be, I don't want to, like, maybe it is sneaky because there's a lot of high total games in this slate, and Jacksonville's allowing over 3 points per drive, the worst in the league. Texans are third worst in points per drive allowed, so we could see a lot of points in this game.
Yeah, this has been one of these weird like matchups where you've seen some really terrible games. Like, remember the Minshew game in London was this matchup, and it was just I almost gouged my eyes out watching
that game.
Was
pretty bad when these teams first played earlier in the year. That was the game Minshew was just awful. Like, they're like Watson and everybody were fine, but Minshew, like, their red zone defense, that was the game where James Robinson was really bad. Like, their run blocking was bad, and that was the game he fumbled, I believe, when they ran those idiotic fourth down plays.
Yes, it's exactly what it was. I mean, we've been on the other side. And when I say we, I mean, like my followers who read the matchup article every single week, they've been with me for, a lot of them have been with me for close to 6-7 years now, when I started at Fantasy Guru. And then I, you know, own that other site in between. I love Watson stacks. Like, I'm kind of a mark where I just always fall into wanting to play Watson, because they're so fucking typical, and they fall behind early. They score the least amount of points in the first quarter and the bottom five in first half scoring. And then they're top 10 in second half scoring. So it's almost like every single week we're getting like 20 plus fantasy points from Deshaun Watson in the second half. My dream here, Adam, is one day he's going to put it all together and do like four quarters of that and give us the 35-point like Russ Wilson smash spot. This could be that game, with Jacksonville allowing almost, what, 72% completion rate against. One of the worst pass defenses. They don't generate a ton of pressure. I really like Houston to have their way with the defense. And it's just a matter of, at that point, how much can Luton, you know, bring them along and keep Houston from not just sticking it in David Johnson's belly a bunch of times, which to me is like, is almost as torturous as going to the dentist, like, yeah, just watching David Johnson carries.
Dude, so Bill O'Brien's gone and they're still giving him a million first down carries.
Yeah.
I don't think any team has more second and eights in the NFL over the last 2 years than the Houston Texans. It's kind of absurd.
Chargers. It would be the Chargers and the Houston if I had to, like, without looking to say, like, first down love of 2 yard runs, it would be those it. Two.
So, and like, David Johnson is going to get 17 to 20 touches, but I play a lot of tournaments. Like, what's his ceiling? He has like an absolute ceiling of like 19 to 20 points. Like,
that's been my issue. Is a lot of people two gun that have been playing him all the time is like this ultimate leverage piece. It's like, yeah, leverage for what? Like 14 fantasy points, like you said. He hasn't been over four catches in a game. He hasn't been over 100 yards in a game. He is still getting, you know, some goal line work.
Yeah, he's a fine cash play, but...
Yeah, but not for me. Like, not with... See, when I hear that, I say, like, so always take the running backs that you have to fade in cash before you determine someone to cash. So would you be willing to fade Baltimore? You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Connor. We haven't even got to Chase Edmonds yet, right? So to me, that's how I basically determine cash, is are you in the top three running backs? If not, then you're GPP only. And that I try to be more, I really pare it down for our subscribers in that way, because I don't think it's helpful. Like, I know there's some people out there that put cash game articles out there with like six running backs, and it's like, okay, so like, what's six? I mean, what three, right? So we really want to pare that down. And I would say David Johnson would, for me, only be like maybe a stack with Watson if you think he can hook up for a passing touchdown.
Right.
And maybe if you want to run it back to Luton because you think they go off. But ugh, like, even with the DJ Chark thing, man, like, you still got Keelan Cole and you got the stud Chenault inside. You got the tight ends. You got James Robinson, Chris Thompson. I can't endorse Chark, and that's hard for me to say, because if you go onto our futures betting page, I have him, you know, like all the DJ Chark preseason stuff. I might have to take the loss on this pretty soon, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you on the Houston stack, though. Their offense is doing what DeBro and I expect them to do since Bill O'Brien's been fired. They've been awesome. Cooks has been a top 24 receiver. Fuller's been 100 yards or a touchdown in every game except for the Ravens game, which he only played 63% of the snaps.
Yep, and last week Fuller was 335, but did get a an Alexander shadow the whole game. Mm-hmm. I'm going right back to Fuller, and this is also like a Cook spot as well. Like, Cook's at 6,100 on FanDuel is a fantastic play. This is that spot where he went fucking nuts in 8-161-1 against the Jacksonville inside pass defense. So
yeah.
I'm all about it, and I think we have Cobb banged up on top of it. The only thing that can get in the way of this stack, my friend, is Kenny Stills, that bastard.
Let's move on to Detroit and Minnesota. The obvious news here with Matthew Stafford being placed on the COVID list, the high-risk contact. They're still holding out hope that he plays. For what it's worth, the Vikings in their press conferences, like Mike Zimmer and the Vikings expect him to play, but Mike Zimmer and the Vikings aren't the Lions. So we will see. Marvin Jones is obviously in a good spot here with Kenny Golladay being ruled out. Jones is 5,100. He's coming off a 2-touchdown game. He has the Vikings secondary that is already bad, and they're missing a handful of guys once again. If Marvin Jones...
they're really bad.
Yeah, so really, let me ask you this. If Marvin Jones... are you playing Marvin Jones regardless, or is it if Chase Daniel starts, are you saying, all right, I'm good on Marvin Jones? And are you playing any Chase Daniel at 4K?
No. Oh, fuck. Maybe some Chase Daniel at 4K, maybe, like, if I'm doing 150. But, again, it comes down to, like, I try to build my – I write my article based around a 3-max. Someone's coming in, Kev, I'm only playing 3 teams. You know what I mean? Like, Chase Daniel's not making the cut on a – you know?
This is a loaded quarterback slate, too.
It is. Even Marvin Jones. Like, Marvin Jones as the alpha does not – I mean, I would have to go back and, like, pull up the numbers, but he does not get the bump you would think.
Look at the first 2 weeks of the season. He was bad.
He was bad.
And nobody's a bigger Marvin Jones fan than me. Like, literally nobody.
Even last week, I mean, everyone's celebrating it. Like, he caught 3 of 7 targets for 39 yards. It's just
the good thing is he had over 40% of their end zone targets, which is what you want with Marvin Jones. I just think he torched this defense when they actually were slowly becoming bad on their secondary, like when they had Xavier Rhodes and Trey Waynes, and now they're just awful. It's really a wait and see, though, with me, if Stafford's playing.
It's Hockenson. I would rather.
Yeah, I think Hockenson is
my go to.
And I think he goes overlooked because he's over that 5K range now, and people are like, But he's another guy that's been super consistent, right? 50 yards or a touchdown in every game. He's been really good.
And super talented. Like, we want to play. There's this old saying that we used to always say back in the day, like, don't play players that suck. that still rings out, right? Just stop playing shitty players. Hockenson is really, really talented. And going back to the shitty side, like, what do we think of Cephas at 3K? Like,
Cephas or Marvin Hogg? Cephas should be active. He was a healthy scratch last game, mainly because of special teams, but with Golladay out,
he's
back in the lineup. But yeah, I mean, we talked about these first and 10 runs, and, like, Daryl Bevel and Matt Patricia just won't stop running the ball on first down. I cannot stand it. Like, Stafford's volume is falling off a cliff this year. They are playing slow and running the football on early downs.
This is probably a game in which, you know, like I said, on a 3-max, tough decisions must be made, Adam, along the way.
Yeah.
You know, you can't play everyone. You have to make some decisions. I'll probably cross this game off. And that includes, are you ready for this? Dalvin Cook, the chalkiest of all chalk running backs this week after the 240 and 4 last week. Like, I have no doubt he's going to get us, like, 101. I'm just hoping that's it. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of passing work, like, 40% of the field gets, what is that, like 16 points or something, right? Like, we can tolerate that at 8.2K. In cash games, go ahead and just lock them in there so you're not, you know, crying all day. But there is something to say about fading him when there's so many great plays on the slate.
I love Thielen in tournaments, by the way, as like a leverage play.
I was just about to say, what you do is you play Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen, who are going to be like 1/4 of the ownership. And if we look at Detroit, like, if you look at their splits, they're actually not as bad as you think against the run. It's really all front end loaded from the beginning of the year.
Yep.
So they've actually made some acquisitions on that side of the ball. They've gotten healthier on that side of the ball. And Detroit was actually my sneaky team coming into the season at FTN Bets. I have a +850 that they win the NFC North, which is obviously not going to happen with Green Bay going nuts. But they do still have an outside chance to make the playoffs. And I believe I have that prop up as well at like +550, because obviously no one was looking at the Detroit Lions to be good. But they're really not as bad of a team as most people say. I think you need to just wait and see what Stafford is before you go real big here. And then I think we should probably talk about the running backs and then move on.
Yeah, I will not be playing Detroit running backs because I don't see a reason why you would or why you have to. They're not going away from Adrian Peterson, despite what happens. And especially where, like I'm just going to – like, DeAndre Swift's the same exact price as DJ Dallas. Like, I'm good.
Yeah, just play Dallas and move on with your life.
And real quick, Minnesota, their identity is to run the football. I don't care. They're not throwing the ball 14 times again. Like, that's low for Kirk Cousins. So, I love Thielen in general and just in tournaments. I think he could easily get off in this game. And like you said, everybody's going to Dalvin Cook. And if Thielen has like 6 for 80 and 2 touchdowns, then which he could easily do.
I like him more if Stafford plays.
Absolutely.
I would worry about script. It might be one of these games where I just cross it off and like pray to God because, you know, this thing could be like the 31-30 or 2017. There's huge range of outcomes in this game, unlike some others on the slate.
Absolutely. Kev, before we go to the next game, while everybody's setting their DFS lineups and imagining their winnings, you can imagine spending those winnings on some incredible, incredible memorabilia and helmets and footballs over at pristineauction.com, where you have bids starting at as little as $1 on over thousands of items. Daily auctions, like I said, featuring signed helmets, jerseys, footballs, etc. Over 8,000 items in their auctions at all times. And you're going to find anything you want for your office, for your basement, for anything. I mean, I'm trying to get a bunch of stuff around my quote-unquote office. Every single week I say, you know what, Davante Adams' signed jersey needs to be mine because I love him. And every week he goes off and I go, all right, best place to do that, pristineauction.com. Head on over to pristineauction.com. Use the promo code FTN for a $10 off your first invoice. Let them know we sent you. Again, that's pristineauction.com, pristineauction.com. Giants and Washington football team up next on this slate. 43-point total. Washington favored by 2.5 at home. Devonta Freeman did not play on Monday night against Tampa Bay. He has once again been ruled out with the ankle. And a lot of people, we talked about this before we got on the pod, Kev. A lot of people might just scoff at the idea of Wayne Gallman, but you can kind of run on Washington, and he's clearly the every down back. I know Alfred Morris got a little bit of work, but I thought like his yards per carry didn't look good, but I thought he looked okay against Tampa Bay, you know, arguably the best run defense in the NFL. He projects for 15 to 17 touches in what should be a close game, and he's 4,500 on DraftKings. Thoughts on Wayne Gallman? That's where this game's kind of at if we're starting with him, I guess.
Yeah, I think Jones is going to be under so much pressure from this Washington front seven. They can really get after a quarterback, and it's going to be dump off city, right? Like, I don't think he's going to have a whole lot of time. So you could see an elevated target rate. Like, you know, we saw with the Philly game, he got 5 targets, caught all 5 balls. Giants can't run block worth a shit, and he's not very good at, you know, he's not a great runner. So I think you're more hoping that Washington controls the game and you're getting the passing down back at 4,500 on DraftKings. He's also, I want to say, 5,300 or 5,500 on FanDuel, which, I mean, you'd really have to be crazy, I think, to play him over Dobbins in like a single format or 3 max. But if you're 150 lineups type of guy, I would put at least Gallman in your player pool, maybe 5% maximum exposure.
Yeah, I'm okay with him. He obviously doesn't excite you, but the opportunity is there. Dude, Golden Tate is like super pissed right now. He's complaining about his role. He liking tweets on Twitter about them releasing him. He worked with the scout team on
Friday.
Scout
team.
Dude, might be like just kind of a healthy DNP. Like he'll be active, but he just won't come on the field. And I was looking at some numbers. I mean, Sterling Shepard, I feel like people forget every week that he's back. I thought he's been playing. Like, dude, the Giants should have won on Monday night. Shepard and Slayton were destroying their corners on double moves and everything, and they were open at will, and Daniel Jones just missed them, which is, I guess, part of the problem with playing these Giants receivers. But Sterling Shepard, since Daniel Jones took over last year, in the games he's played alongside Jones, is averaging 8 targets per game. And he's, you know, under 5K on DraftKings. We might not see Golden Tate in the lineup. So really, it becomes a more concentrated offense of Shepard, Slayton, and Evan Ingram. And Washington, like, they're allowing the highest average depth of target in the NFL at 10.2. So I don't hate Sterling Shepard. I also don't hate Evan Ingram. It was nice to see him remain involved. Probably should have had a touchdown in that game, but they didn't bother kind of reviewing it. They just went no huddle and ran the ball in. But he's had 19 targets the last two games. Washington has been exposed by tight ends. Any interest in the Giants pass catchers? And then I'll throw in on the other side Terry McLaurin, because he will be shadowed by James Bradbury. But McLaurin's just matchup proven. People don't talk about it.
No, he's the man. But yeah, real quick, going back to Shepard, I'm a big Shepard stan. Like, I always draft him in seasonal. He's, when he plays, he just produces, it seems. It's strange that Washington, per Jeff Ratcliffe's advanced DVP, is only allowing 5.5 targets to the slot per game, which is tied for last. But so is Philly. I think Shepard's a lock for 7-8 targets anytime he's healthy. And then if you take Tate out, it just makes it one less.
And that's a good point. I hate to cut you off, but I didn't even mention this. If Tate's not going to play, Shepard might go back to the slot. Like, he does not play in the slot when Tate's active. But if Tate just doesn't play, they might just move Shepard back inside, where he's been way more efficient throughout his career.
Much, much better slot receiver. Just completely fits his skill set. Not that he hasn't been good on the outside. Believe it or not, last year per Football Outsiders, I remember this in my preseason research, he actually had a better DVOA as an outside receiver in 2019 than as a slot receiver, which kind of blew my mind. But that doesn't mean that, just a small sample. I do like him in the slot. I like him at 4,800 on DraftKings. The touchdowns are always going to be like kind of shaky with just the Giants not scoring a lot and him not being a big target share red zone guy. You like Slayton, you like Ingram better for that kind of stuff. So like with that transition, like, what do you think of, if you had to rank Slayton, Ingram, and my guy Shepard, where are you going here?
I would probably rank them. I would put Ingram first just because of the position. I feel like there's more receivers around the prices of Slayton and Shepard than there are tight ends around Ingram. And like the Washington football team is definitely can be had against tight ends. Shepard and Slayton are tough. Like you would think that Slayton's probably going to get more Kendall Fuller, who's been pretty damn good this year. So I would probably put Shepard ahead of Slayton.
Same. And I don't get me wrong, I do love Slayton's skill set. And man, he was so wide open last week.
He had if you watch just the film, he played an incredible game.
Yep. And I was just about to say, he was balling out last week. So, I would not hate getting a little bit of Shepard. This is like one of those a nasty game stack, right? Where this thing's going to be, again, range of outcomes, 22 to 20 or like 35-30.
Yeah.
Probably leaning on the 25-20 side. I don't think we need to spend too much more time on this game. Like, unless you're a mass multi-entry guy, you're fine just crossing this thing off and moving on. Like,
maybe you play the Giants defense, you know?
Yeah. I think the Washington defense.
Either one, yeah.
Yeah, is actually a really good play because, we saw, that dude just goes into, I don't know if he's a stoner.
It's ridiculous.
He just goes into these, complete mind melt phases that are pretty interesting, and that is not a good combo when you have one of the best pass rushes. Washington is actually, let me pull up their DVOA. It's pretty shocking how good they are. They're the fourth DVOA, my friend. Second pass DVOA and 13th first the rush. So, again, just probably a game you can cross off. I don't even think the Giants D is as bad as they get credit for, as we saw last week for Tampa. So, you know what? Just delete this whole game off the podcast.
I mean, the next game, I don't have a lot of interest in this next game either. Bears at Titans. Yep. I mean, I see a slow-paced game. I see a Bears defense that I haven't really used many receivers against all season. So am I going to go there with A.J. Brown and Corey Davis, who, Corey Davis has been really good this year. I don't love those two options. Montgomery is like just I just don't see the. We talked about David Johnson. What's his upside? Like Montgomery's going to get more touches and catches probably, but he's just done nothing in terms of efficiency with them. I don't know. Am I missing something here? I literally don't like anybody from this game. Like this game, I have nobody on my radar at the moment. I don't know if that's a mistake, but I don't like anybody.
You could definitely play Derrick Henry.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, so Derrick, and all I got to say, Montgomery is actually coming in pretty high in ownership in Kyle's model, so we probably should touch on him for sure.
Okay.
He gets kind of a bad rap, right? Like, when you look deep into his metrics, I think he's, here it is, he's fifth in yards created, eighth in evaded tackle, and he's running behind the 17th ranked offensive line per adjusted line yards. He's now fourth in running back targets, fifth in running back catches, and has 14 red zone touches in his last three games. In comparison, Derrick Henry has 13 red zone touches in his last three games. Tennessee has actually been pretty bad against running backs. Like last week, they gave up 94 yards and two touchdowns to the backup running backs in Cincinnati. Another 18 yards and a touchdown through the air to those two guys. They've been allowing 26 fantasy points per game on DK to backs, which is, you know, a bottom 10. They're just not a really good defense, is Tennessee, but for some reason people have a hard time like digesting that, right? Now the problem is, of course, the Bears offensive line is not great. Nick Foles is not great. He's not going to give him a ton of red zone opportunities. But if you had to ask me, like, Kev, what Bear am I playing in this game? It would be Monty pretty easily above Allen Robinson, who's going to have somewhat of a tough matchup when he's in front of Butler. Butler's been playing really well.
Yeah, it's more price with Robinson for me. Like, I think he can get by anybody, but I just like other receivers where he's priced a lot more.
I would say I'm a huge A-Rob guy. The talent is ridiculous, but after a 13 targets for three games in a row, he's at 6.6 in his last three, and that correlates with Anthony Miller's usage going up.
Yeah.
Playing 76%, 91% in the slot last week. We like Allen Robinson when he's in the slot better than outside because Nick Foles is so fucking terrible that it's really hard for him to throw those more accurate, longer passes on the outside, you know, of the numbers. So that's something to watch out for this week. Just, you know, I kind of like Miller if you were to make me choose a wide receiver to play. And then over the Tennessee front, you do got to note that Adam Humphries is not going to play. Mm-hmm. So there will be some targets, you know, available. And I do like Corey Davis. His usage is pretty unbelievable lately for the price. Khalif Raymond is just pretty much going to be one of those guys. Like, he's going to be like P.J. Tucker in Houston. He's just going to sit in the corner. And, you know, he's not going to really do a whole lot. He'll be on the field, but that's about it. So it's Monty, it's Davis. And then talking about the King real quick, and then we can move on. Like, this should be a good script for him, right? Because they should control the game. I like them to win the game. I think, you know, talk about a farce. That's the Bears. So that's the kind of script we want for Henry. And looking at his yards after contact, this is a really funny stat. He has 454 yards after contact, Adam, which is 12 more yards than Monty has in actual rushing yards. So he's got more yak than he has actual rushing yards, and he's obviously first in red zone, goal line, you know, rush attempts. He's going to have a 100-yard prop. He's going to have one of the highest touchdown props on the day. Like, we know this before looking. Yeah. You know, so the last thing I'll say about that is Chicago is kind of vulnerable once they get to the second level. They're pretty good up front. But if Henry gets out in space, you never know, man. Like, he can run over anybody. And you're going to get him at probably sub 10%, which is rare this year.
Cool. Let's move on. Three games left on this main slate. Vegas at the Chargers. So Josh Jacobs is on the injury report with a knee and an illness. He's questionable. I would be pretty surprised if he's set, but just something to keep an eye on. And then Tremaine Pope is doubtful, which is legitimately notable when you saw he had 15 touches last game. He was playing over Joshua Kelly. So that helps solidify this backfield a little bit more. Justin Jackson's been kind of running away with the job a little bit. So let's start there. I mean, do you have any interest in Justin Jackson?
I think you have to at some, you know, Las Vegas is freaking terrible. Adjusted line yards perspective. We know that the Chargers want to run the ball. I just would rather play Keenan Allen and her and the quarterback. So it just, he hasn't really made it on my three max. Let's just say that, but I don't mind the play. I know that's kind of hedging and not giving a real definitive answer, but
yeah, but sometimes there's players where you're just like, you're indifferent, right? Like you, they're not smash plays. They're not priorities, but if you get to them, it's like, I understand why you did it. And I mean, Justin Jackson the last 3 weeks is averaging right under six targets per game. So you're getting some nice pass catching ability. And yeah, he seems to be the guy they're going to give the carries to. Like Joshua Kelly to me seems like he's going to be like 8 to 10 carries with like Jordan Howard's role before Myles Gaskin broke out. Like, I feel like that's kind of what Joshua Kelly's role is starting to become because he has not been playing well. But I agree, like Keenan Allen, they finally priced him up, but like, I don't even know if 7K is enough.
Yeah, it's probably still not enough. I mean, his weighted opportunity, target share, yada, yada, yada. It's Davante Adams light, right? It's just right below what you're seeing with Davante Adams. You just keep playing him until further notice, right? That's pretty much all you have to say there.
30% target share every healthy game he's played with Justin Herbert, so.
That's all you got to say. And he's just good at football.
Yep.
I call him the Clippers, the Chargers, the LAC.
Yeah, but dude, especially because, like, I don't know if Debro has had that problem. I don't think he's a big basketball guy, but I hear you, man. I've done that so many times.
They are actually the eighth neutral pace team this year, which is shocking because they were 32nd last year under Phil Rivers in neutral pace. So as much as I hate their high rush rate, their high first down rate, they are playing fast and they are getting elevated plays because of it. So when you look at like their plays per game, they're second in the league with 72 plays per game. That's pretty ridiculous. They're also pushing teams away from running the ball. They're the fourth lowest rush rate against, which sets up for a kind of one of these sneaky stacks. And I thought it was sneaky, and then I saw it had a 52 total. So I guess it's really not that sneaky, but these teams are actually much better from like a offensive efficiency standpoint than you might think. Las Vegas is third behind, I believe it's just Seattle and KC in yards per drive. They just haven't been quite as good at punching it in, but this is kind of a fun game where you could definitely get some nice stacks with, you know, tell me who you like on the Raiders side from the receiving standpoint if you wanted to run back a Charger stack.
I mean, it would probably be Darren Waller just because I kind of missed on Darren Waller in the offseason. I was worried that the addition of Henry Ruggs and the running backs being more involved, and I know he hasn't played much, but Bryan Edwards, I thought that would really hurt his target share. That just has not been the case. I'm throwing the Raiders passing game out the window from last week because that was the worst weather game of the week. It's clearly their plan was to run the football. I mean, Jacobs had 31 carries, so I like Derek Carr as like the, if you're going a little bit up in that next range after like the Drew Locks, and you can pair him with Darren Waller, and then you obviously know who to run it back with on the other side. I don't see myself getting into much Jacobs. Like, he's okay, but I just think, like, there's a couple. We'll talk about a running back from the next game I like more. I don't know. I do like Derek Carr, though. I mean, these Chargers games, like, look at the scores of these Chargers games the last couple weeks. I mean, 31-30, 39-29, 30-27, 38-31. Like, we're talking some high-scoring football games.
Yeah, it's that elevated pace and the elevated plays.
Yes.
Yeah. It's amazing how few people still study pace and play calling selection and really figure out the nuances of game script before they go in and make their lineups. And that's, you know, kind of always been my specialty in my breakdown. So definitely come over if you haven't read the breakdown.
Get a beverage first.
Get a beverage. It's about 15,000 words a week. I definitely go deep. But that's kind of been my niche, right? I go a little bit deeper than most DFS players. DFS players kind of have a bad reputation for not really being football people, right? They understand the game theory and how to make lineups, but they don't know, like, anybody on the roster other than, like, the three famous guys. So that's always been my niche, is kind of to get deeper and translate those things into, you know, having a lot of DFS experience. And definitely come over to FTN and check that out as we're wrapping down this podcast. Wanted to get that in one more time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, let's get off that game.
Article is like the – well, first of all, it probably takes you – you probably start on, what, Monday?
Yeah, it's a week-long process. It's arduous, man. Like, I got to be honest, this middle of the season, it gets pretty painful because I'm still working 50, 60 hours to run FTN, in which we have 91 people in our Slack already after 100 days. So you can imagine my life right now.
Yeah. Let's get to these last two games on this main slate. Miami at Arizona. Really interesting game here. We have Chase Edmonds now assuming the lead back role for the Cardinals with Kenyon Drake officially ruled out. And then on the other side, Miami, Myles Gaskin pops up with the injury. He's out 3 weeks with an MCL sprain. And it's like, okay, Matt Breida is going to be pretty fun. He pops up on the injury report Wednesday. He has a hamstring and he's been ruled out. So... Let's start with the enticing spot here. Chase Edmonds, 6,800 against a very vulnerable Miami run defense. Hard not to like him, especially given how efficient he's been and how much he fits this offense in Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, this is straight out of my article. I understand Cook and Connor being the ultra chalk, but for me, Chase was going to be my number one running back, and it's not even close. I don't normally lock button on 150 lineups because – like injuries, you know, weird shit can happen and you're just saying goodbye to your day if something bad happens. But I might do it this week, Adam. I might 150 lock Chase Edmonds into every single lineup. I don't care about his ownership. I had Henderson on all my main rosters last week.
Yeah, he was going to smash, dude.
He was going to smash. Like, I won a lot. I own a decent amount of money with Kittle and Henderson in my main lineup, which is sad because, you know, if you get anything normal from those two guys, I definitely would have been up there in that six-figure screenshot with two gun. But I digress. That's part of just playing DFS is injuries. But Edmonds is just such a good player, man. Like, he's so much better than Kenyon Drake. Any sharp, you know, fantasy player, we've all been waiting for this, right? Like, it's literally been waiting for this. All the best ball players who've drafted Drake, you know, way too high probably, are going to cry when Edmonds just goes off for like 150 and two scores this week. Miami's got the worst DVOA in the league against the rush. They are also, I think, third or fourth against the pass, so it's really pushing people into rushing. And Arizona likes to run the ball. Like, people think Arizona's like a pass.
Yeah.
No. No, they like to run. They are the fastest paced team. And when you get a fast paced team that likes to run, like, this guy could get 20, 25 touches in this game against a really bad D. So he's my number one, man. That's all. I don't know how else I can say I like
him. I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, he's averaging over a fantasy point and a half per touch this year. It's like, you know, among the qualified backs, like, you know, the only two running backs ahead of him in that are fullbacks, or Patrick Ricard and Kyle Juszczyk, who have like five touches. Right. So obviously they don't really qualify. And now you're going to give him, what, 12 to 15 more touches per game than he was already averaging? Like, in this offense, it's really, really impossible not to like him. If you get to Kyler or Hopkins, okay. But, like, Hopkins is kind of a pass for me because the perimeter of that secondary is their strong point with Byron Jones and Xavier Howard. And for me, like, I don't see why I would play Hopkins when I can play Julio for $1,000 cheaper, especially if Ridley's out. I like Diggs more. We talked about Tyler Lockett and Metcalf. Like, it might hurt me, but I probably won't have any DeAndre Hopkins this week.
No, they are a great GPP leverage stack, right?
Sure.
Where, like, if I'm
similar to the Vikings receivers with Cook.
Yeah, so let me rephrase. If I'm not going to do 150, like, let's say I do 125 Edmonds teams, and then I'm going to hit like 10 Kyler plus Nuke stacks because they are going to be very low ownership. And dude, Kyler is this year's Lamar, right? Like, if you pull out his rushing stats, they're basically a running back too. 9 carries a game, 62.4 yards, 2 red zone carries a game.
So essentially what Mark Ingram wishes he was this year.
Yeah, we wished we could get that out of like 15 running backs every week. And he's been picking it up, you know, with his passing. So I like Kyler as a – I mean, he's quarterback too, and you're going to get him at somewhat as somewhat of a contrarian play.
And the thing with Kyler is, right, Brian Flores' defense in Miami, they play as much man as pretty much anybody, and I love using, you know, mobile quarterbacks against man defenses.
Correct. Yep. 100%. And they also blitz a lot.
Yes.
So good luck with that.
You can't, like, all he's going to do is just
break
a little stutter step, run, and then everybody's, all the defensive backs have their backs turned, and all of a sudden Kyler is 26 yards down the field.
Yeah, I may or may not have his rushing prop up at FTN Bets already. probably heavy on the May. Byron Jones, too, like, he's been hurt. Nuke is just going to eat him alive. He's a good name, but I think other than that, he's really not a cornerback that scares me at all.
I've talked about that. There's like 4 corners I'm scared of in terms of like coverage. And it's, you know, Byron Jones is good, but he's not really one of them for me. There's really only a couple.
One thing to point out here, I have very little interest in Miami. I like Arizona.
Yeah, I don't really. I was going to ask you if you even like anybody from Miami, to be honest, because I'm probably not playing Jordan Howard. Especially if they get behind, then it's going to be Patrick Laird. Then I don't like. I had my worries about the receivers on this team after Fitzpatrick was benched because.
Oh, big time.
Dude, the last 2 years, he's throwing into tight windows over 20% of the time. It's one of the highest rates in the league. And that's helped Devontae Parker, and that's helped Preston Williams and Mike Gesicki. And Tua's not going to do that. So, like, I'm good. I'm good on my.
Oh, no. When they announced Tua, I sent the coffin gift to a couple of my friends, you know, like about Devontae Parker. Cause like, rest in peace, Devontae.
Yeah, I'm good.
So one thing I do want to point out in my research, this is pretty amazing to me and makes very little sense. Miami is the second slowest team with Fitz under center this year, 31st in neutral pace. Last week, despite being in a positive script for Tua in which they blew out the Rams, they played at the 3rd fastest pace in week 8.
No wonder the Rams had 95 offensive snaps.
Yeah, so what the hell happened there? Like, are they going to play up in pace with Tua? This is something I will be definitely monitoring. It's not like that means I want Miami, but what that does mean, if they really are going to play up in pace, that this is the greatest pace game of the season.
Yeah.
If Miami's going to play that elevated way against Arizona, who we know run a 39% no huddle, which is 19% higher than the second place team. And they're the first fastest neutral pace team. So this could be an absolute barn burner, but which is why I might like the Arizona defense as a tricky little play here, because I think Tua's going to throw picks. Yeah. He's going to put it on the ground. Like,
they're not going to run as efficiently without Gaskin.
No, I really like Arizona here, too. I don't understand the spread in this game either.
All right, last game of the main slate, Pittsburgh at Dallas. Oh, boy. Yeah, 43-point total. It's one of the lowest on the main slate. I think it is the lowest as of right now. Lowest on the main slate. Pittsburgh, 14.5-point road favorites against the Cowboys, who at the time of this recording have not named a starting quarterback, whether it's going to be Garrett Gilbert or Cooper Rush. And oh, by the way, Ezekiel Elliott might be limited and may not even play potentially with a hamstring.
You know, that Dallas at this time of recording is also 0-8 against the spread this year.
Yeah.
Which is truly amazing.
Let's get Dallas out of the way. Are you playing anybody on Dallas?
Negative. Not a single soul.
Not even like, you wouldn't even play Tony Pollard if Zeke, because it's a terrible matchup. Like, if Zeke were ruled out, any Tony Pollard, that would be the only instance I play. But still, it's like, it's such a bad offense. They can just stack the box and say, "Hey, Cooper Rush, come beat us."
Yeah, exactly. And like, how many is he going to really be like that passing down back? Is he going to get it all done that way? That's why we would play him. I'm pulling up his price on DraftKings, $4,000. I guess it's $4,000. Like,
yeah,
you could. He's a really talented player.
Absolutely. Like,
super talented. And we've seen Pittsburgh, you know, they're really good, but we see him last week. They can get run on a little bit. $4,000 mid price. Sure. Why not put him in your player pool? But
all right,
that's about it.
I think Pittsburgh is so interesting on the slate, right? You have the Steelers, and first of all, James Conner, he's, I would say, should be viewed as one of the best plays of the slate for obvious reasons. But like the passing game, right? It's such a smash spot. But you have the Steelers as 14.5-point road favorites. If Ben Roethlisberger throws the ball 26 times in this game, good luck guessing who it's going to be. I mean, we've seen Deontay. Last week was the first game where he did. I know he got hurt a little bit, but he still played the majority of the snaps. First time he played the majority of the snaps and didn't see double-digit targets. They got Claypool more involved, and Juju's been more involved the last 2 weeks. Like, I don't know who the hell it's going to be for Pittsburgh.
No, I would not. I don't play like this. I don't play DFS like this. Like, you're going to look at the Cleveland game in week 6, 38-7 win. That's your most logical game script, right? Mm-hmm. 22 pass attempts for 162 yards for Ben. I think that's probably what we're looking at. And sure, maybe here he goes 200 yards and 2 touchdowns on 25 pass attempts. That's not winning you shit, guys. Nothing. Especially at 6,500. So I don't really see the point here to look at Ben, who has, what, a 22-point ceiling this year. Is Dallas going to be able to turn this thing into a track meet against Pittsburgh's defense?
I don't know how Dallas is supposed to sustain a single drive in this game, to be honest. Part of me wishes DiNucci was playing again just so I could see how many fantasy points the Steelers' defense accumulated. So, yeah. Like, instead of 36, he'll probably just score 20 now.
That's the play you need to talk about from like
4,900 though.
Yeah, so it's 4,900 and 5,000. A lot of people don't take into account that FanDuel has that extra 10 grand mm-hmm. of cap space. In addition, FanDuel's just a softer game. Like, it's just easier to construct. I'm probably going to have like 60-70% pit D and just try to go double exposure on whatever the ownership is. On FanDuel, or excuse me, DraftKings, it's going to kill me. Because I hate paying up for defense, dude. Like, hate it so, so much. And I appreciate the fact that they made it 4,900 to make this decision so brutal, right? But, like, I'm looking at, like, the Detroit Lions defense more than the Steelers on DraftKings because at 2,300, you know, like, maybe they luck into a pick six against Cousins, who's been known to do that. And I want to play CMC. You know, I want to play Metcalf and Lockett and Russ. Like, how do I do that with a $5,000 defense, bro?
Right. I will say, though, like, it's just they've just been so good. Look at their sacks per game. 4-2, 4-5, 5-7, 3. They have 2 defensive touchdowns. Like,
oh, it's stupid,
they're like,
man.
The Bears from, like, what was it, 2017 or whatever, when they were just unbelievable. Maybe the Patriots from last year. Like, they're kind of becoming that defense. But, yeah, yep. I mean, nearly 5K is really tough.
2.2 giveaways a game for Dallas. Pitt, 2 takeaways. Those are both first and last. Pitt is first in blitz rate, first in pressure rate, and first in sacks. Rest in peace, Dallas Cowboys. Good luck, guys.
It is going to be brutal, but that'll do it for the main slate. Dude, Kevin, that was awesome, man. Of course, we would have loved if D-Bro was able to join us, but, you know, life gets in the way sometimes. But
it would have been a 3-hour pod.
That is true. But I think we knocked it out of the park, man. So yeah, if you guys aren't somehow subscribed to FTN, and if you are and you haven't seen Kevin's article, I don't know where the hell you've been. I know we have a lot of stuff on the site to get lost in, but I still think you should have stumbled across that. But yeah, Kev, for anybody that's kind of new, you know, real quick, I know they get the gist of it, but the article, what it's about, and when it is published every week.
Yeah, so I don't start till like late Thursday, Friday, because we're not getting any real actionable injury reports, especially in this COVID season. And it's all about ownership percentages too in DFS. So if, you know, someone's doing a game by game article early in the week, and there's some of those out there, I don't want to say names, like they're not really playing DFS seriously, because you just don't have the right information to make those decisions. I do a lot of picks, as you could tell just from this podcast. Determining script is going to determine how many targets, how many rush attempts. And that's why I've been able to kind of translate that information over to the betting side, you know, where I've almost won the Super Contest, you know, which is, you know, one of the most famous betting contests around. I don't know if you know, I was 2 games from actually taking that down 2 years ago. So that, along with the prop bets, it's just a process that I have formulated through tireless effort, to be honest, about 15,000 words a week, like I said, in which I get to a point where I'm starting Sundays feeling really, really comfortable about the decisions that I make. And that's why you'll notice, like, through my screenshots, I do a lot of single entry versus like 150 guy. I don't really do the 150 that often. So I think that translates better to a common player who is not necessarily running 150 lineups. They want to know how to maximize a single entry, how to enter a three max and like the 33 or the 150, you know. So contest selection, all these things are going into the article. It's not just a game by game. It's a game by game for the DFS player.
Absolutely. Love it every single week. And Kev, appreciate you coming on the pod, man. We've been having, you're the third guest we've had since we started having guests on. It's been fun every single week. And I thought I think we knocked this podcast out of the park. We'll have the premium edition of the podcast covering the Sunday night and Monday night games to pair with this. And you guys should be good to go for week number 9. So D-Bro, we miss you. We'll be back. Talk to you on Monday. Kev and I will be back for the premium podcast for the primetime games. Thanks for listening as always. We'll talk to you guys next time. Peace out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at APPfeiffer24, and at ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.